Coming up, I'm going to tell you how to win with your boss to the point that you become the favorite. It doesn't involve butt kissing. And then why Gen Z and more skipping lunch. And then originality and personalization, the key to your dream job. Helping you win in your work life so that you're winning in the rest of your life. This is the Ken Coleman Show. All right, let's take on a potentially controversial subject today, but it doesn't need to be, and I'm going to give you a different spin on it. How to be your boss's favorite. Now, some of you are going, I don't want to sign up for that game, Ken. Who have you become? Listen, I haven't changed, and I'm not in favor of butt kissing, all right? I'm not in favor of butt kissing. This does not involve butt kissing at all, and this matters. Now, some of you pretend, and this is complete pretend, to not care if your boss likes you or not. Now, if you are one of those people who say, I don't care if my boss likes me or not, you are either a liar or you're a fool. You're a liar or a fool. What you need to do is accept the reality that all of us are competing. We're competing. We're competing for the attention and the approval of our boss. Now, this doesn't have to be some nasty, gross thing. This is just the deal. Like, we are out there supposedly putting our best foot forward. That's the only way for professional growth, right? Is to put your best foot forward. In fact, if you have a standard that says, I'm going to put my absolute best in, because there'll be people that put pressure on you not to put your best in. But if you put your best in, you're going to win. And so the idea here is that that's the only way to get leadership opportunities and a promotion. Now, for some of you, that's a huge problem because your boss doesn't like you because you're not like a bull. So that begs the question, how do you win the boss over? Because if you win the boss over and the boss likes you, then that means the boss trusts you, and the boss trusts you, they're going to give you more opportunity. So here's the first thing you got to do. Start serving. This is not sucking up. Serving is not sucking up. You know the butt kissers are sucking up all the time. It's all compliments. It's flattery. It's not serving. It's manipulating. Now listen, there is always pressure on the boss to deliver a W in some way. That means a win. You got to get a win. And your job is to clearly do what is expected of you. Deliver it how they want it, when they want it. But you also need to be going above and beyond your job and your expectation to support the leader's goals. You want to prove that they can rely on you. I want you to think for just a second about how lonely it is in leadership. How lonely is it? It's very lonely. They've got pressure to make sure that you and all of your teammates are performing. They've got pressure on themselves to perform. And leaders, I hear you, I see you, I feel you, I understand that it is a lonely role. And to the extent that you've got someone on your team who does a great job in their role, doing what is expected of them, but they also are looking for opportunities to say, hey, how can I serve you? How can I take something off your plate? Most teammates, your teammates, for this discussion, let's call them your competitors, aren't thinking, how can I take some pressure off the boss? How can I step in and say, hey, you swamped right now. Any way I could serve you? What's going on? Hey, I got some bandwidth. I want to make sure that you know I'm here to help any way you can. That gives you the opportunity to be relied upon above and beyond your normal job. And when the boss sees you going the extra mile to serve them, and this is not, again, not in that, hey, can I go get your sandwich? Can I get you a coffee? That's suck-up servitude. That's kiss-up servitude. I'm talking, you know, you're paying attention. You see your boss has got a lot going on, a lot of stress, and you see an opportunity to go, hey, let me tell you what this is. This is the equivalent of if you've ever had a family member walk in with too many grocery bags, and you kind of go, hey, can I grab one of those for you around the holidays or something? Or you do it for your wife. Hey, can I get one of those bags? What you've done is you've seen that a person is a little bit overwhelmed. They need some assistance. And not only do you see it, you step into it and you say, hey, can I jump in and grab it? If you're doing this for your leader, let me tell you what happens. They begin to rely on you in other areas above and beyond your current job duties. Now, don't be one of those negative people that go, oh, I don't want too much on my plate. Then they're going to put too much on me. And you always see the negative. No. I'm saying they realize that you have been humble. You have been hungry for an opportunity to serve them a leader, and they begin to rely on you. And now, as a reliable person, watch this, you're more likable. The more likable, the more reliable. It becomes a cycle. Now, here's the second way that you can really win your boss. We were just talking about how to see what's going on in the boss's work life, maybe even their personal life, and there's a lot going on, and maybe they had something happen in their family, and you step in the gap. The first point was all about seeing what's going on with their duties and how their day-to-day is affected. Now let's go the next level. Let's go deeper. Seeing your boss and seeing your leader rather as a person, not just a figurehead of authority. I mentioned earlier that leadership can be very lonely, and it is lonely because you feel isolated. If you're just one leader and you got a team of 5, 10, 15, 20, doesn't matter. It doesn't have to be a large team. You could still be very, very isolated. And what you have to do is always have the perspective that your boss, your leader, your manager is not just a figure of authority. They are a person who needs to be seen, heard, served. And so you need to approach your relationship and conversations with them this way. Don't just be transactional. Be relational. Find those little pockets to just see how they're doing. That doesn't mean that right out of the gate they're going to tell you everything. But over time, the more interested you are in them, they begin to open up and watch what happens. The more interested you become in them, the more interested they become in you. And now we've got ourselves a developing relationship. And this is where, again, back to our first point, the more they trust me professionally, the more they trust me personally. And now we've got a legitimate relationship. Does not mean you go on vacation with them. Doesn't mean you're going to Thanksgiving with them. Doesn't mean you're hanging out with them every night for drinks. What I'm saying is that there is a special bond where they know they can rely on you professionally and personally because you see them, you hear them. And that's how, and again, have a little bit of fun with how to be your boss's favorite, but so few people are willing to invest in their own leader that way. Now, look, this takes work. This takes work. And I've seen it happen in a way where I was leading a speakers bureau many years ago here in the Nashville area, and I hired a guy named Sean. And Sean presented very well in the interview. Great guy, great personality, and never been in the speaker bureau industry. And so I hired him, and I trained him, and I showed him how to book speakers, and I taught him everything that I knew, and he picked it up very quickly, and he was very personable on the phone and very likable. And so he shined in his role. But one of the things that Sean was great at is early on, he was very personal with me. He was early on not afraid when we go to lunch to dive into my story and ask me questions about the family. And of course, I asked him questions about his family. And because Sean was so interested and not afraid to build a relationship with me, he went from being a guy who had a lot of potential, who picked up his role really good and did a good job, to somebody that I trusted completely. So much so that I'd relied on him for everyday advice. If I had a leadership situation that I had not encountered before or one that was complex, I said, Sean, what do you think? I liked him, therefore I trusted him. And it's important to point out that when I left, he took over and he's still running it today. I'm going to tell you, Sean is a capable leader and very good at his job, but he's in the leadership position now because he was so likable with me and he looked for opportunities to win me over personally, but also to serve in the role. He took on everything he could take on, always raised his hand to help. And that's the game. You want to stand out? then stand up. Raise your hand, stand up for your leader. They need people to support them, and they'll support you better. I want to tell you about one of our viewers, Nick. He was a high school chemistry teacher, not making enough for his wife to stay home with their kids. A friend told him about Bethel Tech and their full stack development program, so he enrolled. He got in, he crushed it, he got hired before he even finished. For as little as $5,000 in just 15 weeks of your time, you can learn a skill that will land you a great job in tech. And remember, Ken Coleman viewers get a 10% discount. To find out more, go to betheltech.net/Ken Coleman. If you're enjoying the program, we'd love for you to help us spread the word to others. You can like the videos you're watching on YouTube, subscribe and share, and then on your favorite podcast app, if you give us a follow and a five-star review and share as well, that helps us get the word out. All right, so let's talk about lunch breaks. Just a quick poll, those of you listening and watching. All right, how many of you skip lunch on a regular basis? Turns out, I thought that I was kind of a rare bird, but for years I've had a broadcast schedule that had me broadcasting during lunch, and so it was very normal for me to go four days, some days, a whole week where I didn't have lunch. And, you know, I would eat breakfast or eat afterwards. I mean, I know some people that don't eat lunch at all. But apparently, I just saw this is very interesting. You're going, where am I going with this? Some new data about Gen Zers being the ones who take lunch the least. In fact, they're skipping lunch more than other generations. 7 in 10 Gen Z workers report they don't take lunch at least once a week. That's compared to about half of millennial workers and 4 in 10 Gen Xers. Only 1/3 of boomers give up their midday meal. Them boomers, man, they like that lunch. They like that meat and three. And so you dive into this a little bit more and you go, overall, 48% of workers go without lunch at least once a week. Now, I'm going to break this down because I think this is a not so interesting little piece of data. There's a lot here. And this is a pretty serious issue. Now, let's talk about Gen Z because we're going to start with Gen Z. They are the generation with the highest percentage of people saying, I go without lunch at least once a week. The reason is that Gen Zers worry their bosses would frown on them taking a break. And when they do take a lunch, they are most likely to step away for fewer than 30 minutes. So I started thinking about this because the data is here. Not a lot of explanation on the data. So I started thinking, okay, I think we've got two things going on. And I don't think this is just a Gen Z problem. So this is set up as a Gen Z headline, why Gen Zers skip their lunch break. But this is not limited to Gen Z. All right, so let's look at this in the terms of the newer workers. They've not been working very long, Gen Zers. And they're twice as likely to worry that the boss is going to be upset if they take a lunch. When they do take a lunch, it's most of the time less than 30 minutes. So what's going on? Well, the first and obvious thing is there is a culture problem at the company. We have a company culture problem when this fear of taking lunch is rampant. Now, this could be a couple of problems with the culture. The simplest one here is not a sinister one. It's just a lack of communication. So you take a Gen Zer who's new to the workforce, they come in and it's not communicated well to them, you know, about things like lunch. If their hiring manager doesn't sit down in the onboarding and remind them, or if it's, so it should be mentioned in the final interview, but certainly in the onboarding, if not, and it's just simple. Hey, make sure you get some lunch. Okay. You don't have to go off campus. You can eat here. Let me tell you what your lunch options are. You know, it should be just normal course of communication. Hey, we got these restaurants around here. You know, making it normal to where they go, oh, okay, they expect me to take a lunch. And so in the onboarding process, just a simple handout of, or an email that says, here are all the restaurants within a 5-mile radius. We have rooms on campus where you can eat, you know, whatever that basic communication is, to where it takes the stigma away, because what is unknown to somebody becomes a source of fear. So I think a lot of companies just aren't doing a good job communicating to these new workers, and they're the new guys. And so they don't want to stand out for the wrong reasons, and they sure as heck don't want to lose their job. And so absent of clarity on what they can do for lunch, they just go, I don't know what I can do, so I'm not going to do anything. I think that's probably a big reason. The second reason why Gen Zers and anybody else is saying, I don't feel like I can. And again, Gen Zers are the ones saying, I can't step away. I'm afraid my boss will get upset if I take a break. Okay, so the second reason is probably a little bit more on the sinister side. And again, not intentional, but just a lack of intention makes it bad. And that is, there's a culture of fear. And the communication across the board and the way things are communicated, there is it feels like there's always another shoe that could drop. It's like that teacher, you remember, who just was always looking to get you. Or maybe it was a substitute teacher that came on and was like, I'm not going to get run over, so I'm going to be extra strict. And you just felt like they were looking for something. Just looking for you to raise your eyebrow or whisper or do anything wrong. And so in a culture like that, where the leader gets triggered easily, gets anger easily, speaks in a way that can be humiliating, certainly borderline bullying, then it's very easy to see how a mentality like this can happen. When people are afraid in general, they become afraid of everything. A fearful person might start out in fear of one issue, but if they just become so consumed with fear because of one source, all of a sudden everything makes them fearful. I debated saying this, but I think it bears debating. Y'all can talk about it. I won't get in the comment section. But to a person, if you were to interview people who wore masks during the pandemic, I will tell you, you will find that they worry and they are fearful about a lot of issues. For people who never wanted to wear the mask and you had to basically berate us, that's me, I'm going to raise my hand, I got news for you. I'm not afraid of a lot of things. Now, I'm not saying I'm better and you are worse. I'm saying if you can even discuss this without creating controversy, and at this point, I really don't care. But the point is that fearful people are usually afraid of a lot of different things. Well, people who aren't afraid, it takes a lot to spook them. And that's the point. So I think leaders, the takeaway here is, if you've got people who are afraid to take a break at lunch, you're dealing with a couple of things. One, they're fearful, and maybe you've got an environment that makes them a little fearful on that. And you sure as heck can take away, you've not communicated well that, hey, we expect you to eat. Your brain is better with your blood sugar in proper places. Your brain is better with downtime. If nothing else, a lunch break ought to be something that every leader encourages, because it allows your people to step away, to let the brain reengage, and the data on that breaks between meetings is huge. So there you go. Now, one other little interesting thing for leaders here, because this is pretty funny to me. No surprise here. People that take a lunch break say they believe that lunch leaves them feeling less burned out. So that elongated break in the day is good. But this is really interesting. About 8 in 10 Gen Z workers said that complimentary lunch would drive their decision to head into the office. Overall, 67% of hybrid workers said they would come in for some free lunch. And the reason this came up is because the survey came out that a lot of companies are considering offering free lunches as a benefit, because they can get some tax write-offs too. And the free lunch would kind of encourage people to eat and, more importantly, take a break. And then an added benefit to actually communicate with their coworkers. So, really, really interesting stuff there. What's the big takeaway? Change your schedule. Don't skip lunch. It's not worth it. The negative effects are a ripple effect on you in every area of your life. Welcome back to the Ken Coleman Show, helping you win in your work life so you're winning in other areas of your life. You were created to fill a unique role in your work. That means you are needed and you must do it. And I think a lot of people resonate with that. Think, okay, how do I do that? Well, we have an assessment called the Get Clear Work Assessment, which helps you get total self-awareness on what you do best. Think of your talent and skills. Those are now your power tools to do work that you really enjoy, to create results that you love, thus you're motivated. So you're using what you do best to do work you love to produce results that matter to you. And we give you a deep report, beautiful purpose statement that essentially sets up for you a dream job scenario for you and allows you to see it in real terms. And when you see that, then you can find it. Go to kencoleman.com/assessment, kencoleman.com/assessment, or you can just go to the store at kencoleman.com. Okay, I want to talk about personalization. Not a new word, certainly not a new concept, but I think it's important to understand that as we continue to move forward in the world today that we live in, where people are making millions of dollars in personalization on TikTok, women are making millions of dollars in personalization on Instagram. My friend Rachel was telling me the other day about a girl she follows on Instagram who designed her own sweatsuits and she made $7 million last year selling sweatsuits. Did I get your attention now? Personalization is huge. Let me give you an example with one of the biggest brands in the world. I don't know how many years ago it was, but over a decade ago, Coca-Cola. All right, now I lived in Atlanta for 11 years. Coca-Cola is a universal brand. Coca-Cola World Headquarters in Atlanta. And so I've been to the world of Coca-Cola. I've seen all of their branding. Coca-Cola has made some really dumb branding moves. No one will ever forget, well, those of us that were alive, you got a lot of young people listening, you have no idea, but they came up with the idea of New Coke. Joe, you remember that. Zach's sitting in today. Do you remember New Coke? Kind of. Okay, he's young. So they thought, we're going to take our brand, Coke, and we're going to change the taste a little bit. We're going to make it better. Okay. Sure. That's what me and billions of others said. Sure. And we tried it. You know what we said? It sucks. And it failed miserably. All right, So Coke was just going through stuff, and so they got to a point where Coke was really struggling. And they did something that no ad agency would ever tell them to do. In fact, they broke all the marketing rules with this one thing, and it leads to this idea of personalization, which I'm going to unveil to you another great story of how you can use personalization to stand out big time, maybe launch a company and blow up. But here's what Coke did. This is brilliant. Joe, you'll remember this. So what they did was, is they came up with a marketing campaign and they took the Coca-Cola off of their red can. And what they did was, in hundreds of countries around the world, they looked up the list of the most popular 150 names, men and women. Okay. So let's just say in the United States, Zach and Joe And Ken would never make the list, let's be honest. But let's just say those were the names. They went to African countries, Asian countries, South American countries, all around the world. And what they did was they took the most popular 150 names and they put them out on the can. So instead of seeing the Coca-Cola script on the red can, people saw their name, like Seth, Zach, Ashley, I don't know what it was. Guess what happened? Sales skyrocketed. Because people were like, well, I'll buy a Coke can with my name on it. That's kind of cool. And it became personalized and it worked. All right. personalization in 2024. It is the name of the game in 2025, 2026. I'm telling you, because everything is digital, everything is connected, everything's social media. Everybody wants to have their game, their name in the game, right? Watch this story. This is crazy. There's a California dog groomer by the name of Gabriel Feitosa. He's originally from Brazil, where he started grooming dogs at the age of 12. Now he's 31, and he lives in Southern California. Now, he started trimming animals when he was 12 just to make extra money. He found that he really loved it, started volunteering. As he gets older, he gets into the business, and he's just doing what normal dog groomers do. Dog owner comes in, says, here's Fido. I want you to give Fido a trim. So he does that for a while. And then one day, he gets a wild idea to use hair dye and his ability to groom and turn his pup into another animal. Well, it was very popular. So, give you examples. He would transform. Oh, are they showing this on the thing? Oh, this is fantastic. Now, right there is a dog. I'm guessing that's some type of a doodle right there, because I recognize that coat. And he has transformed that doodle into a giraffe. Now, I think that's completely, utterly ridiculous.
Poor dog.
Poor dog is right. But the owners love it. Here's another one that looks like a zebra. I mean, look at the artism. The artistic work here it's fantastic. It's great. I think it's terrible for the dog, you know. But people love their freaking dogs, and people love, like, turning these dogs into dolls. And this guy has learned how to turn dogs into dolls, right? Like, you see that picture right there, and what's the first thing you think? I think Build-A-Bear, right? Where you can go in and they do that for you. This is a real dog. This is a real animal. And so here's the point. This is a guy who figured it out that I can get super creative and I can do dog cuts and grooming for their owners that make them really, really happy. Well, how long do you think it takes to do that? To transform a doodle into a giraffe? Well, the answer takes a long time. So what does he do? You ready for this? This is where it gets interesting. He charges a flat rate of $800 for small dogs. Hey, you want to take your little small dog in, Joe, and have it turned into a...
deranged tigger? No.
All right. It'll cost you $800. By the way, you could fly out to San Diego, because people travel from all around the country to get this guy to transform their pup into something else. $1,200 for the big dogs. So if I take Ellis, Joe, and you take your little one, we're going to be out $2,000 plus hotel plus airfare. All right. People are flying around the country for this guy, and this is taking off. All right. Now, he made $1.3 million last year grooming dogs. $1.3 million grooming dogs. Now, here's why I share the story. This is a guy who figured out that he was really, really creative. He liked doing it for his own pups. He tried it. People wanted it. And you know what? He goes, this is what I'm going to do. And he says in this article, I cannot believe the amount of money I'm making. Well, I guess not. Now people are coming in with requests to turn their dog into a unicorn. He's getting inspiration from video games. He now has all these ideas that he tells people, hey, we could turn your little pooch into this. Here's the point. You may think it's crazy. It might be. It's also brilliant. Personalization. He's providing a personalized custom service to a bunch of wacky dog owners. And you know what? Joe said earlier, I feel bad for the dog. Guess what? The dog has no freaking clue. Dog and, thinks they got a shampoo and a cut.
And I wonder how long it lasts.
Up to 8 months. So if you want your dog to look like a giraffe, you're going to stick with that for half the year or more. So there you go, folks. Personalization, the creativity to allow your customer to personalize and customize. Ooh, it's a game changer. Figure out your lane if you're creative. You'll be like making a lot of money.
Thanks for listening to The Ken Coleman Show. For more, you can find the show on demand wherever you listen to podcasts and watch the show on YouTube. You can also find Ken across all social media by following @KenColeman.